It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Swing, high fly ball, belt to right center, and the Braves have won it!
There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
A walk-off homer from Freeman, and the Braves win it!
He is! Braves win!
Fair ball, it's a walk-off. Acuña sends us home.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Braves Digital Media Content Manager, alongside, in the Braves Alumni Lounge, Director of Braves Alumni Relations, Greg McMichael. That was a mouthful there. I got it all out, though. 84 episodes in. Wow. I'm starting to learn a thing or two. Yeah. Well, Greg, we've got a guest we've had on a couple times before. We had on Bo, I believe, the first time. Mark Bowman, I should say. I'm so used to calling him Bo all the time. Mark Bowman, of course, a longtime writer, covered the Braves for MLB.com, Braves.com for, I believe, 21 years now. I believe it's his 21st season in this role. Been in the Atlanta area and covering the Braves, or with the Braves in some capacity, since 1996, but in his current role for a couple decades now. We had on Bo, I believe, end of the 19 season, and then early shutdown last year. He was kind enough to come on with us and helped us with some of those Braves classics when we were trying to, gosh, remember those days a little over a year ago when we were all first in the middle of the shutdown trying to figure out, like, okay, we're all sitting around looking at each other virtually over our computers, like, all right, what do we do to fill the time here? And Bo came on, had some fun with us, and it's good to have him back here in person in the lounge talking about the season. And Bo is just somebody I reference it a little bit in our interview, but like, there are certain games where I work all the home games from the press box. But there are certain games or certain days where I'll move up in my seat and sit next to him, because we chit chat and bust each other's chops. I mean, literally every day, and it's been that way for years. So it's good to have him on and talk about the team a little bit. I mean, he's seen a lot now in this game. Just like you, seen a lot, been around the game for not quite as long as you, but, you know, getting there. So it's just good to have somebody like him who's well respected, and I can vouch for that. I may not want to say it that much or admit to it, but he is very well respected among his fellow reporters. So it's good to have him on and just talk about the team a little bit.
Yeah, I always love the perspective of someone like Mark, who follows the team very closely, is there, pays attention. I would say he's a Braves fan, but he has a job to do, and that's to be objective and to try to find the stories and give interesting things that people want to read. But we've always not had as a ball player, part of me, when it's my job, you were taught not to let your guard down a whole lot. You didn't want to share too much. You also wanted to keep it professional. But it's fun being able to reminisce with him now that I'm not in that role anymore. So we can talk about the team. You and I talk about the team as fans and employees of the Braves, and get to hear his perspective. He's talking to them a little bit more regularly than we are. But he also remembers a lot of things that the teams that I was on were going through, and the history of the Braves, which is a lot of fun, because I think he looks back, and as you'll hear, I mean, he looks back fondly on those times and has good memories, and a lot of it's just relationships, right? I mean, right. We all have relationships, whether it's him talking about Bobby Cox, or we're talking about Bobby Dews, or some of the great coaches or even former players. And it's always fun to be able to talk about something we're all passionate about.
Sure. And I think somebody like him, you don't manage to hang around the game as long as he has if you're not good at what you do, A, well respected, B. But also, I think he's fair. I think he's you know, he's not out here to blast anybody, but he's going to give you his honest opinion. If you're following him, whether it's, you know, at MLB Bowman on Twitter, or you're reading his stuff on Braves.com, MLB.com, his newsletter, which we talk about a little bit here, you know, he's going to tell you what he thinks, mm-hmm. and he's going to give you his honest opinion on it. And, you know, he's not necessarily – well, I mean, I know you phrase it this way, but he's not – in his role, you can't really be – a fan. Like, if we asked him that, I don't think he would say he's a fan of any team at this point, just because I think from his perspective, he's probably, to be able to do his job correctly, he has to approach it a certain way. You and I are lucky because in our roles, we can be the biggest fans in the world, mm-hmm. which is great. But I think he's very fair. And even for the most part, even when he's maybe critical of people, I think he can give his honest opinion on moves that Alex has made, and Alex is going to respect that. He might not always like it, but I think that Alex and him know they can reach out to each other, they can talk to each other, and there's still going to be respect there. And gosh, thinking about it now, I guess Bo's been here long enough that he's been, John Schuerholz, GM when Bo first started, and then Frank Wren, then Coppy, and now Alex. So he's been through a few different mm-hmm. GMs and a few different three different managers now too. So it's, you can't hang around, you can't just go out there and just blast people every day and expect to hang around. And you can't just go out there and sugarcoat everything and be, you know, everything's hunky-dory every day. You got to strike that right balance, and I think he does a great job with that. And yeah. he knows his stuff, too. I mean, he can break down a player and watch a player. That's that thing that you have as a person who played the game and that he has that covers it that I just don't have, is being able to really watch. I generally can watch players and develop my opinions on them. But I don't think I have that ability to really break down like the little things, pick up on little things, whether it's something in a pitcher's delivery or the way he's deploying his pitches or a hitter's approach. That there's things, no matter how much I watch the game, I don't have that ability like you guys do to really pick up on some of these things, which is why I'm glad I get to be here and listen to y'all so that I can learn. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think he... I would say maybe he's not in the fan of the category of the people in the stands, but I think he wants the Braves to do well.
Okay, I got you.
I think from that perspective, because that's good for everybody's business, sure. right? It's like the guy who owns a restaurant down the street. He wants the Braves to win. You know, he may not necessarily be the same type of fan that's going to come, but I think being anything in this business, it's always better. His job's a lot easier when we win.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely.
So I guess I mean it that way. But I love getting to do this podcast. We get to talk to a lot of different types of people, and I think it's great to hear their perspective and not feel like I have to worry about anything, you know, from the standpoint that, you know, as a player, like I said, as a player, you know, he kind of always kept the media, you know, at arm's length.
Sure.
But it's fun hearing his perspective on things.
Yeah, definitely is. Well, why don't we go ahead and do that now? Here he is, Mark Bowman. Well, on the heels of having Paul Byrd, and we were talking about his experiences at Churchill Downs on last week's episode, I figured we would get the Atlanta Braves press box preeminent horse racing analyst.
Oh, nice.
On the show this week.
Shouldn't that have been before the race?
Yeah. No, I know how he bets. It's better to do it afterward. I'm kidding. Kind of. Mark Bowman from MLB.com, longtime Braves reporter. What is this? Is this like season 21, 22 as your role?
Yeah, in this role, yeah. Season 21. So,
man, wow.
About that. Yeah, I got
Warren
down
here. Spahn status.
Yeah, I got down here in 1996 as an intern and told mom I'd be home 6 months later, and she lives down here now. So,
nice. That's how it all works.
Nice.
But yeah, it's been fun. It is amazing. You think about, you know, that first year in 96, it was just, you know, a couple months after you guys had won the World Series, I got down here, and, you know, the Olympics were coming, they were changing stadiums, it was a lot of excitement. So these 25-26 years, they've flown right by.
Yeah. I wanted to get into you put out this newsletter now, which is really good stuff. If you haven't already checked it out as a Braves fan, go to Bo's social medias, go to Braves.com, check out his new newsletter, subscribe to it, sign up for it, and it'll get emailed to you. Where can folks do that, by the way? Is there a certain email, or just check you out on social media?
Well, I mean, I will post it, on Twitter, every Thursday. And at the bottom, it shows where you can go into your MLB or Braves.com account, MLB.com account. And I think it's just somewhere you check, receive weekly newsletters, that kind of thing.
So. Okay. So at MLB Bowman on Twitter, check that out. So I wanted to start with this because I think it was last week's newsletter. Maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I can't remember. But I really liked this bit you had about the 04 Braves and talking to Bobby, because you were talking to comparing it to the 2021 team's rough start, however you want to put it.
Yeah.
And talking about the 2004 team kind of started off similarly. And so I don't know who it was that asked Bobby about,
Yeah. It was
what he was going to do, but I just love that. Yeah,
it was great. I mean, I miss those days, and Greg lived them. It was at home. It was fine. It was good to be able to be at home, but there was a lot of other reporters around. It was great to be out on the road, where you walked in that clubhouse and the manager's office was wide open, and Bobby just was willing to talk at any point in time. there was no set times. There were no Zooms. There were no cameras. He was just sitting there in his, whatever he had on, and he watching NASCAR or an afternoon game, and you just sat there, and you realized, you don't want to force a lot of questions about the Braves, so you sat there and let him talk about the league, and you'd slip a question in about the Braves, he'd answer it real quickly, but this particular story you're talking about, that team. Is, let's not compare it directly to this one. This year's rough start reminded me of it. But that team was 4 to 5 games under .500 near the end of June. And it felt like it was slipping away. And at that point in time, the team had 12 consecutive division titles. They had made the trade. Yeah, they'd made the trade for J.D. Drew the year before. So,
coming off the heels of that 03 team that was scoring like a billion runs
right.
a day.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, Chipper had gotten – he was battling some injuries early on. The team just couldn't get healthy. And the pitching staff just wasn't the same. It was never – it didn't matter. This was the first year you could tell that you no longer had a Maddox, a Smoltz, or a Glavin. You had Russell Ortiz and Mike Hampton, John Thompson. It just wasn't a great team. It wasn't the kind of teams you've been used to. And so we were in there, just talking, and Bobby, he never got upset, but Bill Zach said to him, Bill Zach was covered Braves for probably close to 20 years too, way back in the day for Morris News Service. He said, what are you going to do, Bobby? And Bobby just said, what do you want me to do, Bill? What do you guys want me to do? Do you want me to go out there and yell at him? What is that going to do? Do you want me to go flip tables? Do you want me to go do this? It's, and he made a great point. It's not like just getting in someone's face is going to change everything. So anyhow, they won that night. The next night in Baltimore, they had a 5-hit shutout, Daniel Cabrera. And the next day, they won. And Sunday, they're down, 7 or 8 runs in the 7th inning, come back and win. Javi hit one of his big home runs that year, and then they just went on a tear. And basically what I was just trying to say is you don't know exactly where that turning point's going to be, what's going to change that season. But here we are, 15, 16 years later. Now, I vividly remember those days. I remember going, that being the turning point. And every season, you're going to have that, for good or for bad. And this year, it's going to happen. This team has too much talent, I think. I mean, it's tough when you lose Travis d'Arnaud, for however long this is going to be. That changes things. But, and there's some things that have not gone the right way. But here's the other part of that. Oscar Noah, what he's done, that's a very pleasant surprise that's going to continue to provide benefits for many more months to come. And the offense is going to get better. I don't know when it's going to happen for this club, but 15, 20 years from now, maybe we'll be talking about, like I still do that day in Baltimore.
Yeah, I remember that game, by the way. That was I remember watching that game because it was my birthday. I thought, oh,
really?
Well, this that was a nice little present. My team like came back. I think it was like 7 runs or something, like you said, Bo. They came back and won. Yeah.
Well, that's – I was just looking at that lineup. It was a pretty stout lineup, you know, for Call and Andrew Jones, J.D. Drew. You know, you had Chipper and Giles. So, yeah. I mean, there was a – that was a very formidable lineup. The pitching staff were, you know, the guys were solid, but they weren't, you know, a bunch of superstars. Yeah. It reminds me about, you know, the 93 team. It took us till the All-Star break. It wasn't until after the All-Star break when we went out to San Francisco and we swept the Giants, and that's when things just – it was one series against the team we were chasing. Of course, things were different back then because there was still just the East and the West. But it is interesting how a ball team – and I will say about this team now that things can turn around really quick when everybody's in the same boat. So you think about the division. Are we really having a bad start? Because we look like we're right in the middle of the pack because everybody's either really bad or, you know, kind of like my Cowboys in NFC last year. Everybody was 5-10, right?
Just let the record show. My Washington football team dominated the NFC beast last year.
Yes,
dominated. But carry on. Yeah.
But I was just saying that you know that things can turn around really quickly when you look at that lineup. You look at the pitching staff, and all the other teams are in the same boat. I mean, we don't have to compare ourselves to the Dodgers today, you know, or even the Diamondbacks. But we just have to look in our division first, and everybody's in the same boat. So either we're all off to, you know, a slow start, or we're all terrible, or everybody's battling some sort of, you know, the bad breaks of baseball, right? You got a thumb and you've got a sore shoulder here and hamstrings, and eventually that's going to work itself out. And that's why they say the season's always a marathon and not a sprint. You know, right now it's hard to look past that, but I don't remember any team that we actually came out of the gate outside the 82, you know, 13-0 Braves. But the teams that I was on, we always started kind of slow. And then once everybody got into their routines, and because, you know, things work out, right? The injuries, you know, can take you a little bit of time to work out. As a ball player, I don't look at what's going on right now and panic at all. And, of course, I'm sure, you know, you have the same perspective just watching these teams over the years, that it's really about who finishes strong, not necessarily who starts strong.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can just go with recent history. Let's go back to 2019. And so they went to L.A. around, I think that may have been, if you went back and looked at it, May 6th through the 8th. Let's throw out those dates or something like that, 5th through the 7th. They got swept at L.A. So that's, you know, they were 4 or 5 games under 500 around this point in time that year. They went to Arizona, played a game, then put Ronald at the top of the lineup, and boom, everything started to change. But even there, it wasn't till the middle of June to where they just – the Phillies came in here. McCann had a walk-off hit, I think, on the Friday night, and it just really took off from there. It started to materialize in June. So you got that year. If we go back to even last year, I mean, it's a 60-game season, so it's harder to kind of figure out exactly when it changed. But you didn't feel great about the club when Ronald's wrist started hurting in August, and Ozzy was on the IL, and Soroka was on the IL. So you're almost half – not halfway through the season. You're almost a quarter way through the season at that point in time. And then I kind of – when did it all change? I'd say that doubleheader against the Yankees when, you know, Ronald came out there and hit the walk – or the leadoff homer against Gerrit Cole, and Ian Anderson made his debut that night. It kind of – that to me, that kind of felt like it was the turning point. You didn't know. I mean, heck, you're looking at that day and you got a doubleheader against the Yankees. It's, you know, who knows what's going to happen. But all of a sudden, you know, you put two good games together, and that season took off. And you go back to 2018, that team was trying to find its way. You think about what that bullpen was through a good part of that season. You know, they were just putting pieces together and, you know, hoping Jesse Biddle and Shane Carl and these guys, this would work and that would work. And, you know, it just I guess I don't remember an exact point game or nothing stands out from that 2018 season, but it was somewhere into June before you had any clue that this team might be able to keep it up and go. So like you said, it's a marathon. You look at it throughout the years. Go back to 2010, which is a great year. Fans love that year. Bobby's last year.
It was a fun team.
And yep. they went to D.C. and, I don't know, John Lannon or somebody, you know, pitched really well against them. And they went to Philadelphia 2 days later and 49-year-old Jamie Moyer pitched real well against them. And then 3 days later, Troy Gloss became Babe Ruth for 6 weeks and all was right in the world. Yeah. So you never know.
I you brought up Enoa a little while ago, and I wanted to ask you well, I could put it – I know somebody on Twitter put it this way, like, so are we officially saying that Waskar Noah is a thing now? Because it seems like he's a thing. So that's the Twitter parlance for you. But what I would say is at what point – how long do you – when you're watching a guy – because we've all seen, whether it's a hitter or a pitcher, go through stretches where – well, you just – Troy Gloss, he was for about 6 weeks or however long it was in 2010. I think it was around May, June, something like that.
Yeah.
Where he was just like – he was like the MVP of the league for that if you just went for that stretch. So we see people that get hot stretches or whatever, but how long can you see a guy or a pitcher like that before you decide, okay, I think what he's doing here, and look, the grand slam, the home run, that's the two home runs, that's fun, but I mean, I'm talking about pitching wise here. How long do you see him, how many of these starts does he need to put together before you'd be like, oh, before you're sure, like, all right, I think he's here to stay, like, I think this isn't just a flash in the pan kind of thing?
I'm going to lean on Greg from a pitching expertise on this, but I'm just going to throw this part out here. I love these two pitches that he has. I mean, if you can throw 100 and you can throw that kind of slider, and you're a two pitch pitcher, you can have some success for some time as a starter. I think that how good or how successful he is over the entire season depends on how much more he develops this changeup, which we've seen a little bit more the last few starts. I love everything about his stuff, that fastball and that slider. I do question how long you can be really dominant as a two-pitch starter. I'd like to get your idea. What do you think, you know,
well,
he has to do?
I mean, let's just compare him with Drew Smyly right now. So you got one guy that can't execute two pitches,
yeah,
and you got one guy that can, and that's the difference between one being successful and one not. So when I look at what's wrong with Drew is that I don't see him executing anything. I mean, the slider, he's got just as good a dominant slider. Maybe it's not as nasty, but he's left-handed, but he can't hit a corner. You know, everything's just left. All his mistakes are getting hammered. But when I watch Waskar, he's executing both pitches. He's throwing his fastball up. He's throwing it in. He's throwing it out. And he's throwing his slider down. And he's not walking people. So he's ahead of everybody. So he's aggressive. And, of course, his confidence right now is through the roof. And you can't discount that. But it also came from him executing time and time again. I looked at him last year, and he showed some really good, strong signs of being a good relief pitcher. But then you put him in the starting role, and I thought, hey, this kid wants the ball. He's pitching well. And then I saw a little step up this year. You know, now he's getting more of an opportunity, and he's staying aggressive. And he's making his pitches. He probably will need another pitch. But, I mean, we know guys that pitched their whole career with two pitches. I mean, but they weren't a guy that was throwing a straight fastball. Even though he throws 96 to 97, it's pretty straight, and a slider. So when I look at him, both pitches are hard. I think it's more difficult for a guy like that to have longevity when there's not much change of speed. As dominant as his slider is, he may be throwing one a little easier early in the count, one harder late, or vice versa. But I still see him as a one-speed type of pitcher. And what's going to take him to the next level is allow him to do something that kind of drops the bar. So I look at it as a fast, a medium, and a slow. He's got the fast and the medium, but he really needs something slow, whether it's a changeup or curveball or whatever. But right now he's filling a void that we have, and that's somebody to go out there and give you six, seven innings. And, of course, Charlie's been doing that a little bit, but with with, you know, with Max gone and with Soroka gone, he's been a breath of fresh air. And how can you not love him? Dude's hitting bombs. And I just kind of wanted to talk about the elephant in the room is, why is it that every pitcher, when he pitches and does well, he continues to pitch. But when he doesn't, he sits on the bench. But yet, a guy can go out there in the starting lineup and keep hitting in the same spot, making the same bad swings, and he's like, well, you know, he's in the starting lineup. He's just going to stay there. Why don't they just take those guys and put their butts on the bench, right? And move them to the ninth hole and bring the guy who's hot, bring him up to the fifth hole, you know, and the fourth hole. I mean, why not?
You know, we've got a fourth headset. I've been thinking it might be time to bring a former position player on this podcast too to balance things out a little.
Oh my gosh. It is so funny how, you know, being in the bullpen my whole career, you kept pitching as long as you were doing well.
Yeah.
But you quickly moved to that 11th spot, you know, on the pitching staff if you weren't doing well. But God forbid anything you'd ever suggest something like that to a guy who's hitting batting 205 and he needs to be sitting on the bench for a little bit until he finds a swing.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Those guys are really sensitive. You're changing me from the sixth hole to the eighth hole? What's going on? I mean, how am I supposed to function?
Yeah.
Well, while we're talking about guys who are playing well so far this year, Bo, what have you seen out of Austin Riley here lately? Because he was going back into last year and at the start of this year, I mean, he was struggling pretty hard, and it really – I don't know if anybody's seeing the ball better than him right now in the Braves lineup. Well, outside of Ronald Acuña, it's like Greg and I were talking before you got here. It's like you don't even – when you start talking about the Braves lineup, you don't even really talk about Ronnie because it's like he's literally playing on some other planet right now from everybody else. So we can get to that too. But we'll start with Austin Riley. I mean, what have you seen out of him here lately?
I credit them both for something very similar to be, you know, 23 years old, whatever, and just have that kind of plate discipline and just an understanding of the strike zone. And that's, you know, I guess we saw a little bit of it from Ronnie over the years, but just where he's taking it to where he is just swinging at strikes and now and just saying, here, you know, you've got to challenge me because I'm going to, you know, if not, I'm taking first base. And then, you know, to see it from him, I guess, is maybe even a little bit less surprising than how quickly Austin has taken his game to that level. Here's the guy that just swung at every slider out of the zone, got himself behind an account so frequently. You know, I think that's the big thing is he has been patient and he just has that much better understanding of the strikes. And all of a sudden he's had himself in hitter's counts. And you know, last year, if you looked at the numbers, his strikeout rate improved. He wasn't striking out as frequently. And, you know, he wasn't swinging at as many sliders out of the zone. And when guys made mistakes with sliders, he made them pay. You know, people say, oh, he's only hitting the hang sliders. You don't hit good sliders, you know.
Right.
You know what I mean? If somebody executes a slider, it's so anyhow, to his credit, he was no longer susceptible to that slider. He reduced the strikeout rate. And then all of a sudden, started this year, and even last year, you said, okay, well, he's hitting a lot of ground balls. Okay. That goes back to the whole launch angle thing, whatever. I'm not a launch angle guy. I'm a timing guy. You know what I mean? I don't – maybe there is something to launch angle. But to me, it's timing. And his timing is right now, and more importantly, he's swinging his strikes, making pitchers, you know, attack him in the strike zone. He's getting ahead in the strike zone, and now all of a sudden, or not getting ahead in the strikes, getting ahead in the count, and now all of a sudden, we're sitting here going, can this guy do this and be that guy he was at the beginning of his career, where he was homering once every 11 at bats over the first 6 weeks of his career? This is a difference maker. I suggested last week. In that newsletter came out last Thursday, I said that move him up to the four hole. Didn't want Darnold to get injured at that time. He's up to the five hole now, but I really like the thought of you start your lineup with, you know, Acuña, Freeman, Ozuna, Riley, Albies. Now, but I'm okay with putting Albies there if you don't want to put Ozuna and Riley together because, you know, two right-handers right there, especially with the three-batter minimum rule. Because putting Albies in between them, you can find some kind of advantage there maybe. And I would say this. you needed Austin Riley or Dansby Swanson to step up this year, and right now it's looking like Austin, it might be that guy. And I think, you know, and where exactly how many homers he hits this year, if it's 30 plus, whatever, you're gonna be thinking a lot differently about Austin at the end of this year than you have at the end of either the past 2 years.
I think it was even before this season started, I was talking with somebody, just a friend of mine who's a fan, just Braves fan, and we were talking about Austin Riley, and he was kind of down on him. I was like, well, you might end up being right about Austin. I don't know. I was like, but you got to remember, like, yes, he came up in whenever that was. I'm going to say May of 2019. So he's been up for a while. I was like, but if you look at his number, I was like, he hasn't even played a full 162 yet. I was like, I know where the patience starts to run a lot thinner when you're expected to win, which this team is and has been for a couple of years now. So I get that you kind of need him to start playing up to his abilities or whatever, but I was trying to stress to the person, this friend of mine, I said, listen, I don't even know what he played through last year, but I was like, it's not a full major league season, he hasn't even played. I was like, you need to give him some time. Like that first, it was like when Frenchie came up in 05, nobody's going to be able to sustain that level. Like, I don't care who you are, you just can't. They're going to come back to earth, or there's going to be adjustments. The pitchers are going to adjust to you, and then it's up to you to then make those adjustments back, and then that just goes on and on and on. I was like, we need to give him more time. I said, you need to give him another year or two before you can really make a judgment on him. And so it's been, and then the way he kind of first started this year, I was kind of going, eh, oh boy.
Yeah.
And he might have been right, but it's just been, for me personally, it's just been great to watch him kind of seem like he's been taking that next step at this point. So I don't know. I really wanted to bring that up because I do, as much as I love to give you a hard time, I do trust and value your opinion when it comes to evaluating players. So,
well, one thing you can take to the bank, you see a guy who is taking the ball the other way with authority. Like, even his first out last night was a line drive to the warning track. Mm-hmm. I mean, he hit that ball right on the nose. When you see guys doing that, and with his power, if he can do that first, that ball inside, you can react on, and you can get your hands in on, and you can foul that off. But you can't do that with a ball away. You can't sit on a ball in and foul a ball off away. Mm-hmm. But you can sit away and foul a ball off in. It's you know, incredibly difficult because it takes way more discipline to hit the hardest pitch in the world as the ball low and away because you don't see the ball enough. You can place a ball on a tee, and we do this as a drill when I was teaching at my training facility. You put a tee. When you have the ball inside, you can see almost three-fourths, almost the complete ball. You put that ball low and away, you only see a spot of that ball. And it is very difficult. And the amount of discipline it takes to stay back and drive that ball, that's one of the hardest pitches in the world to hit. And so when guys – and, of course, Jeter made a living doing that. If you notice that, he would get jammed and just get hits all day long because he was so sitting on that ball away so much that he would sacrifice the power inside. And but he would still maintain, you know, of course he was a leadoff guy, but he would still maintain hits. All those guys like Ichiro, they have a gazillion hits and all that. You can't be a good hitter and not be able to hit that ball away. Yeah. And that's what Dansby struggled with for so long, and he did great last year, and now he's back to struggling again this year because you get into your mind where you're getting out ahead of that ball, you'll never hit the slider away. But if all of a sudden you're driving the ball to right and you're fouling off balls away and you're fouling sliders off, then that's the pitcher's best weapon against you. And if you're taking that away from him and then he's going to try to come inside, he's going to make a mistake, then you're going to hurt him. So that's what I love about what Austin is doing right now, yeah, is that he's showing us that he is going to be a good hitter, at least right now. Now, going back to when he first came up, the reason why he's swinging at sliders last year and everything is because everything he swung at, he hit his first year. It was either a broken bat single or it was a home run or it was – he could swing at anything and it was getting hit for that 3 weeks.
That's like Frank Coor when he came up in 05.
Yeah.
It could have been 2 feet above his head and somehow he was still tomahawking it for a double or something.
Right.
You know?
So he probably got this false sense of security, like, well, I can swing at anything. And then next thing you know, he gets hurt a little bit and then he's not hitting anything.
Yeah.
So – I think there was an adjustment period, but now what he's seeing right now, his patience and his confidence, and he seems to be a pretty level kid, level-headed kid anyway, and playing great third base, and then being able to the discipline, man, I there's nothing in his game right now that tells me he's a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
Because of the adjustments he's made early on in his career. Those are tough adjustments to make. Now, it helps when somebody puts you at a position and leaves you there, as opposed to Camargo that's been all over the place. I feel bad for him because that's been one of the toughest things that anybody as a young player could do. It's kind of like being a relief pitcher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's just difficult when you don't know your role and you're all over the place. That's why pitching is so difficult, but for a position player to do that. But fortunately for Austin, they believed in him enough they put him at third base, and I think that's allowed him to settle down and relax and get after it. But that certainly makes it easier, but it doesn't make, you know, what he's done, diminish anything that what he's done right now with this hitting.
I think that was a big, you know, decision last year. They didn't make it right away at the end of last year, but they gave him the job, you know, eventually, whether that was 2 to 3 weeks into the season, and it made it clear that it was his. It wasn't, he no longer was competing with Camargo, and you started to see him really get going there last year, and then the quad started bothering him in early September, and you know, at that point in time it was just coming, and so then it wasn't right. But you know what? One thing he did show, he hit that big home run in game one of the NLCS last year.
Sure did.
Yep.
Ninth inning. I mean, so not only does he have the potential to give you, you know, tremendous power, he can give you timely power, mm-hmm. which is important.
And we have to give Alex and Snit a lot of credit for that because they're doing the same thing with Pache.
Yeah.
You know, Pache showed us a lot in the playoffs coming up on the big stage and doing well. And it's not easy for an organization to do that. But what's good about our lineup is we've got enough big players around them. I think you can give some young players that opportunity to sit and relax and get going, and that they really believe in those two.
Yeah.
But that only is going to serve them well. They're going to give them more time to figure it out, and that's just got to help.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, Bo, you've been covering the Braves and Major League Baseball for a couple decades now. So is there anything, have you ever seen anything like what Acuña is doing currently? I mean, I was asking this when we had Alex on a couple weeks ago, and I don't know, I'm going to keep coming back to this for probably years to come because that ground ball he legged out earlier this month.
Mm. Yeah.
I've watched that replay. I think at the time we had Alex on, I told him I literally watched it 10 times. I've gone back and watched it a few more times since then because it still just doesn't – I've just watched so much baseball in my life. It still doesn't compute that he beat that out because it's like I keep looking at it, looking at that replay, thinking like I'm missing something.
Yeah.
That ball was hit slower than I thought. The shortstop or whoever – or third baseman, I forget now. Shortstop bobbled it or something.
Yeah.
And he beat it out. That's it.
He's just being right-handed. Yeah. I mean, what do you think his speed really is? What you think he's a Ford? You think he's world class speed?
You have to think that. Yeah, I mean, you have to think he's got to be close. You think about. I don't know. I guess I'd have to look at that particular, whatever they said that day was 31 point whatever, you know, feet down per second down the first baseline. I mean, that's about as fast as you can go.
Is that Mickey Mantle type speed?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean,
Mantle was left-handed.
Right, exactly.
Those guys, you know, that were left-handed like that. But, you know, Dion was – his open speed was the top, but Otis had a quicker step.
Yeah.
So you see Ronald as one of those first-step guys because he can steal bases? Or do you think his – or does he have both? Do you have open speed?
I think he's got both.
Like a Ricky Henderson.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think he has both. Because it's not just that sprint down the first base. It's just seeing him, you know, what we've seen him score on the shallow stack fly or you know, a ball that's, you know. What was the play last year where he scored from first on a ball, on a single to the like the right center field gap? I can't remember what happened. Did somebody bobbled just for a second? But yeah. I mean, we're talking like just a bobble. And that's all. That was the difference of him scoring. Now, he was running on the play and all that kind of stuff. I get it. Yeah. But he scored from first on a single, basically. Yeah. You asked me, have I seen this? No, not in these 20 years. I've never seen anything like it since, you know, Bo Jackson was dominating Tecmo Bowl. So, you know,
right.
I just think about, I can see aspects of his game. Kenny Lofton was such a disruptor on the bases and getting on base. That 95 season with Kenny Lofton, we were scared to death of that guy getting on base.
Yeah.
And he could get on a number of different ways. I see that part of Ronald's game. But Ronald's got – I mean, he's got three or four more other aspects of his game. But, I mean, that's just one piece.
That's the thing. So here's what Ronald is. Ronald is Kenny Lofton and Albert Bell from an offensive perspective. Man. You morph these two guys.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, from a defensive perspective, he's doing things with his arm that you know, I growing up in the Pittsburgh area, and I've heard all the Clemente stories, and I'm just sitting there, and just this is Clemente's arm. This is I love seeing Ronald in right field. Can he play center? Sure, he can play it, but his
accuracy is
him in right field is unbelievable. There was a play last week where he was flat footed in right field, and the guy didn't run, but I looked at the gun. It was 94 miles per hour. He was flat-footed in right field. I mean, it was one of these.
We're now using the radar gun for outfielders?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What the heck?
So I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to.
I've seen that, guys. He got a hat like the dude from the Dodgers, you know, there at the third baseline.
Everything's getting clocked, including you leaving the garage here. Watch your speed. StatCast is controlling everything in this world.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad you brought that play up, Bo, because I was going to ask you about it, because this was – so my normal spot in the press box, I'm down in the front row, and Bo likes to chill back in the second row in his spot. But on day games, because I'm just so precious and don't want to deal with the sun in my eye, I'll move up and hang out next to Bo. Ronald made that throw, and I kind of – my eyes kind of went open, and Bo just out loud goes, "Wow." And I looked at him, and we're looking at each other like, did he just
– Yeah.
Like, I mean, it just – and it's like he's been up here since when? 2018. And it's like we're a few years into this thing now, and still on an almost everyday basis, I'm just watching the guy going like, he's just doing things. I've just never seen this before. It's every aspect of this year in particular. It's everything. It's everything. There's not one part of his game where he's not. His athleticism is just something.
Yeah,
it's just something God given that's beyond, I think, what most of us have.
If we can get the color codes a little bit different, I mean, instead of the yellow, I'm not.
You don't like the yellow? Really, I like the yellow. It looks good. I'm a fan.
D-Row called him Iron Man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's good.
How many spring trainings did you spend at Disney?
Just one.
Just one. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
2000.
But you've been down there countless times. And so how many times have you been walking by the right center field wall while they're taking BP? And you know that you got to be somewhat conscious, right? With Ronald, when he's batting, you don't just need to kind of like occasionally look. You probably should just walk with –
it's like that year Hayward was peppering, Frank Wren's car down the right field line at Disney.
Yeah, exactly. The thing was, then you kind of expected it from the left-handed batter.
Yeah, that's right.
All of a sudden, this right-handed
guy. Now it's
guy,
both. It's all over the place. Well, was that All-Star game? I mean, he hit like
the
home run derby. Yeah, he hit so many different home runs. His spray chart was incredible.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was – took the words right out of my mouth. Is like that's – because he didn't win, a lot of people probably didn't look at that enough. But I was sitting there going like I wonder how many other people are watching this and realizing he's the only person that's doing this. He might not win the thing.
Well, that hurt him. It hurt him.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't Tatis, but it was for Toronto. Wasn't he going against him?
Vlad.
Yeah, Vlad Jr. Yeah, he was going against him.
Right.
And he was hitting just pepper in that left center, stands. And he ended up winning it because he just pulled it.
That's pretty unbelievable. Well, Bo, I think we've kept you long enough. There's probably a race starting out somewhere. I don't know.
Santa Anita?
Yeah.
He's got Seabiscuit showing.
That was always the good thing when we had Chino here on the staff. I always had somebody to go to the
oh,
horse
really?
Track.
Okay.
The horse track was Chino.
Have you ever been down to Tampa? That one?
No, we never did go to that one.
First one I ever went to. They got good food there.
Yeah.
Rod Nichols. I don't know if you remember Rod. Rod was with the Indians. We were together, and I was at my my first instructional league with them, and he or 1 year he took. He said, "Hey, have you ever been at the? Maybe that was a dog track."
There was a dog track. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I went, no. He goes, man, they got good food.
Yeah, exactly.
So we went there. He took me to eat. It was good.
We went, we'd leave spring training, head up to the Orlando Kennel Club. You know, it was like about a 45-minute trip up there. And
such a fancy name for a dog.
Oh, yeah.
Orlando Kennel Club. Yeah, okay, but anyway.
Sounds more sophisticated.
Yeah.
Gino'd walk in, and Smoltz went up there with us every once in a while. And
shocker.
Hep-prone. Yeah, shocker, right? Hep-prone. And do you know Hep? Did you ever cross paths? Anyhow, he was became famous there last month when
Mick Cronin's dad.
So he so when UCLA went far there in the tournament, they kept showing him there, and I was like, yes. And he used to accompany us there too. So good man. He was responsible for drafting David Justice.
He was
a Cincinnati area basketball coach, high school basketball coach, had a great career and became one of Paul Snyder's right hand men. So.
Oh yeah,
good
if
man.
If Paul had him, then you know he was a good man.
That's right.
Well, Bo, we thank you so much for taking the time. You drove all the way down here to hang out with us today, and I appreciate that on a day when the Braves aren't in town. So we appreciate that, and
French will let you hang out with him, watch the game.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. Go upstairs and watch the game with him. Yeah.
That's right.
All right, Bo. Thanks, man. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you.
Our thanks again to Mark Bowman for joining us here on Behind the Braves. Greg, we got a couple of big – well, first of all, as of this episode coming out, we're going to have 100% capacity back here at Truist Park this weekend, which is great.
Nice.
I'm so excited about that. It's been great having fans back the first month of the season, but to have a full ballpark again, man, it's just – we've literally been waiting for a year and a half, maybe longer now for that. So thank goodness. And you've got some exciting stuff coming up with Braves alumni. We've got Alumni Sunday this week with somebody who I think all Braves fans who, whether you've been watching the team for 20-ish years or you've been tuning in to watch the Braves on TV for the last 5-10 years, you're very familiar with Brian Jordan this Sunday, right?
Yeah, can't wait. Brian's going to join me for Alumni Sunday out in the plaza. We'll do a little Q&A with him and talk to him about his career, what he's doing now. Two sports stars in Atlanta Braves history, Ron Reed on the 66 team, 66, 67, 68, I think, and then he was also in the NBA, Deion Sanders and Brian Jordan.
Brian Jordan doesn't get enough credit out there for being a two-sport star. Everybody remembers Bo Jackson and Deion and those guys, but I don't feel like Brian gets enough credit. I don't know why that is either.
I don't know either. Probably because he was a linebacker, you know, and it wasn't in a real flashy position. Bo was a running back, right? And then he played football in the South.
Yeah,
I think
that's true.
He was big before he ever got into baseball. He played for the Royals, which wasn't really big. You know, Brian got a chance to play for the Cardinals and the Braves, but Brian went to a smaller college in Virginia. And he went to Richmond. So, but then he played for the Falcons. He played a few years for the Falcons, and he was an All-Pro selection. But I agree. You know, Brian's not super flamboyant, you know, and everything, and he doesn't, you know, talk himself up like that. But of course, you know, Deion's just on a different level because Deion, you know, was big in everything.
Right.
But I agree. He doesn't get the credit he deserves from what he did, but man, he was some kind of athlete. You know, I would not want to have gotten, wouldn't want to be a running back or a wide receiver and going across the middle with him. I think he was a free safety or a strong safety or something like that, but he's a solid dude, and I think he probably stuck some people pretty hard.
He was a great
outfielder, and he was always a tough opponent. I faced him when he was with the Cardinals.
Okay. Well, looking forward to that. So you'll be doing a Q&A with him this Sunday.
Yeah.
Again, for 100% capacity this weekend at Truist Park, so hopefully we'll get a lot of people out there to come out before the game and hear your Q&A with Brian. And then in a couple weeks after that, when the Pirates come to town, one of our favorite weekends of the year, Braves Alumni Weekend, will be rolling in town that weekend, and I can't wait. That's going to be a lot of fun stuff coming up. You got your list together, still working on that, and all the events and everything.
Yeah, we've got our events pretty much set. We've got over 40 guys that are coming out. We typically have a little bit more of that, but, you know, with everything that's going on, we've limited it this year just for about around 40, but some good names and guys that we're excited about being here. And it's going to be great. Just like, you know, we're talking about having Mark here in studio and being able to talk face-to-face, getting able to see some of our alumni here and the fans to see them in our parade and introductions and autographs and Q&As and all different types of things we'll be doing while they're here over the weekend. Hope everybody comes out and joins us. It should be a great weekend. Plus, we're playing the Pirates. It's always good to kick them around. So, we're looking forward to it. And this is definitely one of my signature events, favorite events, where we get all the guys back together.
I can't wait, man. It's going to be a lot of fun. It always is. And we hope to see as many of you out there as can make it. Well, again, thanks to Mark Bowman for joining us here. As always, thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing Behind the Braves on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, braves.com/behindthebraves, wherever you get them. We appreciate it. Keep rating, reviewing, subscribing. Keep telling your fellow Braves fans and your family or your friend group about us, and check us out. We've got, I think, what is this, episode 84? Going back to the fall of 2018, and we've got a whole library of episodes with some, even if you don't like us, we've got a lot of cool guests that we think you'll like, so you can go back and check some of those out. All righty, well, as always, thank you. For Greg McMichael, I'm Ricky Mast. We'll see you next week on Behind the Braves. Hey, Braves Country, we just wanted to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe Behind the Braves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or at braves.com/behindthebraves, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Braves.